As Russian airstrikes continue in Syria, negotiations and a final settlement for Ukraine resume again in Minsk this week. So how has Vladimir Putin's move into Syria changed the conversation on Ukraine? Hello from our broadcast headquarters in Prague, and welcome to the Power Vertical Briefing. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical Podcast here at RFRL. Joining me here in the studio to discuss the things we expect to make news in Russia this week is RFERL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Brian.
So, Steve, one of the assumptions many of us has had about Putin's move into Syria was that it's an attempt to change the conversation on Ukraine in the sense that it's transactional. Since I've been away for a couple weeks and not buried in all the details like you have, I'm going to need to rely on you to fill me in a bit. So how much, if at all, has the conversation on Ukraine changed as a result of all the action we've seen in Syria?
Well, it's certainly changed on the Russian side. I mean, the Russian side of the conversation has changed. And I think you can see that everywhere in the Russian media. It's all about Syria now, you know, nothing about Ukraine.
Is it attempting to establish linkage between the two?
Absolutely. You know, Russia is trying to establish linkage. I mean, you saw that with Putin speaking to Obama in New York last week, where you had Russia saying, OK, this is going to be a conversation about Syria. And the U.S. saying, well, no, it's, you know, we're talking about Ukraine. And the West is clearly resisting all attempts by Russia to make a link and to say, OK, you know, we're going into Syria and now you're going to forget about what we've done in Ukraine. And, you know, the big way that Russia is trying to do this is there's a lot happening in eastern Ukraine. Now you've had a new agreement to pull back weapons. And at this meeting in Paris, Hollande said that the separatist elections in eastern Ukraine will have to be delayed in order to hold those within Ukrainian law. So that's a big deal. That means if that happens, that means, you know, we were wondering how is this. There's no way that Minsk is going to be fulfilled by the end of the year. Now we're seeing, okay,
if the separatists back off on their plans to hold elections this month, you mean?
If they do back off, and you know, we haven't really heard anything clear from either Russia or the separatists on that. We've heard from Hollande and from Merkel, so that still remains to be seen. I think that that Russia wants and the separatists want to hold get it as much on their terms as they can. But if they do postpone those elections and not hold them on the 18th. You know, there is a chance that Minsk could, in fact, be fulfilled. They hold elections under Ukrainian law. Russia pulls out, you know, and then Russia will say, and I think this is what Russia is trying to do now, what Putin's trying to do now, she'll say, look, we are fulfilling Minsk, lift the sanctions.
Mm-hmm. One thing I saw that suggests maybe there is going to be a deal on the elections is the separatist leaders said that they don't rule out that they could postpone the elections if they get what they want in terms of changes to Ukrainian law and the Ukrainian constitution, and these are things the Ukrainian side doesn't want to give. But one thing I saw that suggested perhaps the linkage might be working are comments that German Chancellor Angela Merkel made in Paris over the weekend, where she said, and I quote, when Ukraine restores its sovereignty not over Crimea, but over another part of the country, this process will be completed. She's in reference to the Minsk process.
Right.
And many people interpreted that as, well, Crimea's off the table. We're not going to talk about Crimea anymore. Now is that, do you think that those fears are founded, that maybe Crimea is indeed off the table? The original sanctions were imposed over Crimea. Additional sanctions were imposed over Russia's actions in the Donbass.
Right, that's true. But Minsk is more, the Minsk agreement itself is more about eastern Ukraine. So, you know, could be she's saying, okay, when this happens, when Ukraine has control of the border, has sovereignty over Donbass, then, you know, Minsk is essentially fulfilled. And I think whatever you think about it, you know, I think whatever happens, whatever deals are done, whatever comes out of eastern Ukraine, you know, I think that's probably is going to be separate from Crimea. You know, I don't see Russia giving back Crimea, you know, anytime soon. But I
see us lifting sanctions.
Well, I think, you know, some sanctions could be lifted. But on the other hand, there are some sanctions that are directly linked to Crimea. Those would not be lifted, I assume. Others could be. And I think, you know, this is what Russia is probably banking on.
Yeah, I mean, one thing, and we were talking off mic about this a little bit too, is if we get Minsk implemented and the elections take place on the schedule that the West and the Kyiv wants, and that Russia's allies win anyway, does that give Putin what he wants in eastern Ukraine, in Ukraine writ large? Because the goal here has always been Kyiv, not Donbass. It's been having a veto over Kyiv's direction, particularly its foreign policy direction.
Right. And I think, you know, that's a very good question. Probably what Russia's doing now and the separatists are doing in terms of not saying, OK, you know, the elections are off, is trying to, you know, get as much as they can, get amnesty for, you know, for everyone who was involved in the violence, get as much as they can and have this on their terms as much as possible. But it's an open question, I think, whether Putin wins, because, you know, as you say, his goal, I mean, having apparently scrapped the goal of taking more of Ukraine, getting a land bridge, his goal appears to be to have leverage over Ukraine. So can't join NATO, you know,
can't join the EU.
You know, so I think he's probably banking on that. But whether you know, holding elections would really get, you know, and fulfilling Minsk would give them that, you know, I'm not sure. I think one thing he's doing with Syria, I believe, Putin, is, you know, in a sense, hoping his people, Russians, will kind of forget about Ukraine, because, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, he hasn't, you know, won there. So this is like, okay, you know, Ukraine is kind of over, but look, we're in Syria.
We're a player in Syria.
And I'm, you know, I'm a big international leader. So I think in part the Syria works as a cover for, you know, if Putin doesn't get what he wants and he has to give up essentially Ukraine, then that's, aside from Crimea, yeah, then that's, you know, that's a cover for it.
Yeah, that works as long as we go from the assumption that this is all smoke and mirrors for domestic consumption. And I think part of it is.
Part of it. Yeah.
But I also think there are some genuine geopolitical goals here. I mean, Putin certainly wants leverage over Ukraine. He doesn't want to lose Ukraine. And in fact, I think Ukraine is the more important foreign policy goal to him than Syria.
So right, it's a longer term.
It's a longer term thing. It's closer to home. But the other thing, the open question, I think you raised this as well, is that it is an open question about what a Donbass integrated into Ukraine would look like. Is it going to be this unambiguously pro-Moscow region? We don't really know.
No.
We really don't know. The polls there show, the polls that have been able to be taken, and to the extent that polls under those conditions are reliable, suggest that there's a lot of ambiguity
right
there and ambivalent feelings toward Moscow. So I'm not sure if this would work out for Moscow. It may work out, but I'm not sure it would work out for Moscow, even if they get everything they want.
No, exactly, because you'll have a couple things that work against Moscow, which is you'll have a feeling that, well, you kind of gave up on us.
Right.
You know, you sent us back to these fascists.
Right.
And then also just the facts on the ground, just the fact that, okay, it's in Ukraine, you know, we have to deal
with,
you know,
Kyiv.
We have to deal with Kyiv. And, you know, so I think those are things, you know, Putin, if anyone, you know, knows about how facts on the ground kind of create reality. And I think he's in danger of losing some of the grip on Ukraine, because if that does happen.
One last thing before we wrap up. Just reports came over the wires just as before we came into the studio that the Turks have complained that Russian planes have violated their airspace. And this is another thing we haven't really talked about with Syria, is that Russia is going to be coming into direct conflict in many ways with NATO, and in this case with Turkey, which is kind of is NATO country, but it's also a kind of a Russian ally at the same time. This is another thing, I think, a contingency they haven't planned for. Do you see this Turkish airspace violation as kind of an ominous sign from Moscow's perspective?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely ominous. You have Hillary Clinton talking about, well, we should have a no-fly zone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a big deal. You know, and Turkey isn't happy with Russia, with what Russia's done with Crimea, with Crimean Tartars. So, you know, this kind of thing is...
And their interests are directly clashing in Syria, right after Erdogan was in Moscow for the opening of that mosque last
week. No, absolutely. Yeah.
So, all right. Well, on that note, that's all we have time for today. On that note, we'll wrap it up. You have been listening to the Power Vertical Briefing, a weekly look ahead at the stories making news in Russia. I'm Brian Whitmore, host of the Power Vertical podcast. And joining me has been RFERL senior editor Steve Gutterman. Join us again next week. And now, as always, I leave you with the soothing sounds of Noise MC.